This is Art Unbound, the official podcast for the Portland Art Museum and Northwest Film Center. My name is DJ Ambush, and I'm the Operation and Contents Manager at 96.7 The Numbers FM, a community-based radio station here in Portland with the focus on representing Black culture and music. Back in the fall of 2019, we partnered up with the Portland Art Museum for their exhibition, Hank Willis Thomas, All Things Being Equal. We set up live broadcasts in the galleries and knew right away that this was a solid partnership. When the pandemic hit last March, the Numbers and the Art Museum applied for a grant together from the Regional Arts and Culture Council. And thanks to the funding provided by that grant, we were able to work together again, pooling our resources. This partnership became even stronger in the summer of 2020, after the world took to the streets in response to the death of George Floyd, which raised awareness of many other deaths of innocent Black people at the hands of the police. These protests put Portland on the front page of newspapers around the world due to the heightened response by law enforcement officials. But as we know, the news doesn't tell the full story. As you're about to hear on this episode, Portland rose up in many different ways, and we had the opportunity to speak with one of the street artists who started it all, Emma Berger. As always, relevant links can be found in this episode's description, as well as at portlandartmuseum.org/podcast, where you can also find a full episode transcript. And now, here's our very own Marcel Michel, aka DJ Passports, interviewing Portland artist Emma Berger.
Hello, and welcome to the Portland Art Museum. This is a very special program that we have here hosted actually in the museum. Like, even in a COVID kind of world, the museum is open, just so you know. And we have a really special guest with us here, local artist, local creative, local resistor, local protester, local feminist, local everything. We all local everything here. Emma Berger, thank you so much for being here and for being willing to have this conversation and talk about art, life, love. What else? What have we talked about pre-getting on camera?
Yoga, mostly.
Yoga. We did talk about yoga. And you're like, I don't do no yoga. I wrestle. And I'm like, I got sisters. I don't wrestle.
And I got brothers. You got to learn to wrestle.
And you got to learn to wrestle. Like, someone tried to wrestle me yesterday, but that's an entirely different story.
That's for off camera.
That might be for off camera, or it might be for like, I feel like there's always these points that you really help people grow. And I'm about to go off on this complete tangent about just like humanness.
Do it.
And things being human. It's like, I've been watching these like TV shows lately, and more like there's depictions of homosexuality, right? And just like queerness and like seeing people's reaction to it. And in my head, I'm just like, it's just human. Mm-hmm. Like people get all like, oh, they're doing that. They're promoting this agenda. And I'm like, nope. It's been going on as long as humans have been humaning.
There's an aspect to it of whatever you grew up with, I think, and then learning a new... I grew up in Berkeley. Everyone was gay. We had one of our friends, she turned into a girl sophomore year of high school and no one batted an eye.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's one of those things that just, it's really affected by your community. But I think that when it, like, I think sometimes we forget, like, oh, it's just humans, right? Because there's wild things that we'll allow ourselves to watch. We'll allow ourselves to watch violence towards women. We'll allow ourselves to watch people be blown up and killed. Yeah. And then we're like, wait, two men? No, it's human. It's just humans being human. It's like you're watching someone eat, you know, shellfish. You're like, I'm allergic. No, I can't watch that. It's like, you don't eat it. So what has it got to do with you? So that's my little tangent.
That's my new favorite. I'm going to just start using that analogy when people are like against anything gay. I'll just be like, yeah, so, you know, if you're allergic to strawberries, you can't watch somebody eat a strawberry. I'm so sorry.
It ain't got nothing to do with you. You're not eating a strawberry. You're not going to have an allergic reaction.
Go buy blueberries. Become a blackberry person.
That's
this is okay.
It.
Leave the strawberries for the people who like strawberries.
On a scale of one to homophobia, how about none? Like, that's all.
There you go.
So I want to talk about just a bit of your journey. with being here in Portland, and you, of course, you said you come from Berkeley. So maybe give us a little bit of background about, okay, so you were, where you're from and like what brought you to Portland. And then I want to talk about like what your journey has been like in Portland, especially recently.
So I grew up in Berkeley, California area, specifically Albany, but no one knows Albany. So I always say Berkeley. Albany's so tiny. It doesn't count.
She's right over yonder.
My whole family's artists actually. Mm-hmm. And we all do different things. Like no one ever learned.
Different disciplines.
Different. Yeah. My dad is a draftsman. My mom's a sculptor. My brother's a potter. I kind of am a jack of all trades, doing a little bit of everything. So yeah, I just grew up in like a big arts household. I also have an older brother, but he's the only one who doesn't do art, so it's okay.
He's the normie.
He's the normal one. But yeah, grew up.
Is he a banker or like something?
He just works in tech. The tech human. Okay. You know how they are.
I know how they are.
Yeah, and just I grew up, and so when I wanted to go to art school, it was just, that was the no-brainer. I think if I had wanted to be like an accountant or a lawyer, like my parents would have been like kind of worried. Mm-hmm. But I was like, artist. And they're like, great, join the family business. And so went out to art school out in Brooklyn, a school called Pratt. And then I ended up moving to LA for a couple years, kind of landing in the film industry, actually. And then I actually came up here because of Leica. I work in there. I work as a fabricator there when, you know, I have a job. And yeah, and that's kind of what brought me here. And I bounced around a lot. I'd actually lived in Europe for a time and kind of going everywhere. And this was the first place that I got here. And I was like, oh, this feels like home. It's kind of like Berkeley and Brooklyn had a baby and then someone like put a forest in it.
Right, right. I'm originally from New York City and lived in Brooklyn before moving here. So like there was something that reminded me of a bit of that here, but yeah,
it's
was
very
not
neighborhoody
nearly.
And it's very kind of, there's just so much happening, and it's almost so much happening that you almost feel like nothing's happening because you're not, until you like pick something and then you like pick one top, you're like, I'm gonna look at salsa dancing. And you're like, oh my God, there's like 25 different places to go salsa dance. It's kind of like that here where there's like so much community and it's so thick with everything.
It's a city of many micro communities. Yeah. And just like, if you have a very specific interest in a very specific kind of thing, you can find a community in Portland that really rallies for it.
It's been, well, that even to use that point, I'd actually never really done that much street art or anything in Portland because I was working at a movie studio, just day job that takes up a lot of time. And so it actually wasn't until recently that I kind of met this whole other community of artists that I didn't really even knew. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know existed. Like I didn't know that they were all there and that they were all working on things and building things and kind of like making stuff happen. And so it wasn't until a couple months ago that I kind of became accidentally part of that community.
So prior to a couple of months ago, you hadn't done any street art?
No, I'd done a couple murals. Mm-hmm. I had done a mural inside a Ben and Esther's bagel shop, just a bunch of bagels. Mm-hmm. And I'd done some murals down in Albany. And
Ben and Esther's like right by my house.
What? Really?
Ben and Esther's like around the corner from my house.
We live next to each other.
Do we really? Where do you live?
Where do you live? We have to talk after this. We're not going to tell them.
This just got weird.
We're neighbors.
I'm worried.
Oh, yeah. The owner and I got into a fight.
She might know about the person who tried to wrestle me yesterday. Damn it.
Very possible. But yeah, no. The guy who owns Ben and Esther's, we got into a fight about matzo ball soup. And lo and behold, I ended up painting his whole
That's
shop.
That's so awesome. Small. See, Portland is really a small town, like
this is what I'm talking about.
Like,
I met
trying
him
to act
today.
Like, right, literally, and like we live on the same block.
Yeah, this is gonna get
This is gonna get weird.
I can give you a ride home later.
Real talk. So then life comes into we get into like the last few months of what it's been like, or just 2020.
What a decade this has been.
What a worst case scenario this has been. Like, you know, like I'm the kind of person that plays out like, what's the worst thing that could happen? Well, this, and this. And then there's 2020, right? Which for me is a mixed bag. I would say 2020 is a mixed bag of like god awful things and like incredibly important things. Okay. Right. And so, you know, being here in Portland, I don't know how many days we're into this resistance that's happening here. Because I don't even like to call it a protest. I like to call it a resistance.
I keep calling it in my head like a civil war.
Right, yeah. Right. And we're definitely waging something against the other side. And so with the protesting that was happening nationally, like that happened everywhere in the country for about like a week or two. And then there was Portland.
Yeah.
And who was like, Nah, we're gonna go hard in the paint for a while. Like,
yeah.
We got plenty of seconds on the shot clock. We're gonna keep going. And so, how was that for you? How did you come into just the protest space? What was your introduction to it, to coming into the protest?
I remember when the first big night of protesting happened. It was like, maybe not the first big night, it already started happening. And, you know, we kind of, COVID was in the midst, and we have quite a, have asthmatic household members, so we were staying quite safe. And I remember one of my best friends, he went down there and he didn't really tell anyone that he was going. He just went to go see what was happening. And he came back the next day and he's like, whoa. And it turned out my number was the one on his arm. And I was like, tell me that you're going to these things if you're going to put my number on your arm.
Yeah.
You know, because you get arrested or something. And so I remember just hearing all about it and all these things. And then it was Monday morning. I woke up and Sunday night was when all the looting, I think, happened. That was the big night of smashing windows and all the things. Or maybe that was Saturday. I get them all mixed up.
If I'm recalling, I feel like that was a Thursday to a Friday.
It was like
the whole thing started on a Thursday into a Friday. By the weekend, that first weekend, like I think the looting had already happened. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time that I went to any kind of thing was that Sunday.
Yeah, because I remember Sunday, I think, was when they started putting up the boards. That's when shops were like, we got to, like, you know. And I remember hearing, like, we were reading, our whole household was like, we were watching all the live streams, we were reading all the news. We were reading about just shopkeepers in other states who were saying, no, like, if what you have to do is break my window, do it. Because, like, this is the time. And this is, like, they're like, yeah, if my store has to burn down to make this right, like, do it. And we're all very moved. We're all just kind of reading all these things. And so Monday morning, I woke up and I just was all in a mood. And I was like, we've been reading all these things. It's every live stream. Like, our day was filled with the news. And I was like, I just have to go and, like, see it for myself. Mm-hmm. Because you can only read so much news. And I drove down there. And I remember parked on the east side and actually physically walked across the street because I was like, I don't know what's there. Like, what if something happens and I can't leave? And I just walked for like 20 minutes and it was silent. Like, there was like no one really out. It was all these like cleaning crews and like no one was really out. And I remember just walking and then slowly the boards started appearing and I started walking more and more into downtown and the boards were just more and more boards. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, I'm getting chills right now. It's also kind of cold, but... But it was just, it was eerie. And it was just this awe-inspiring thing of just every store. I got to like a point by the Apple store and just everything was boards. Mm-hmm. Everything was boards and everything was silent. And it was like probably like 11 in the morning and just everything was quiet and everything was boards. And I just, it was freaky. It was just like, and I was like, whoa, like this is something.
You go there and you feel like you walk into a war zone. You're just like.
It felt.
Everything is like shut. And boarded, and you're just like, what city am I in? Like, where am I?
It was just, and I was, you know, and so I called up my my best friend from college. She lives out in Ohio, and she's a black woman, and I called her up, and I was just like, this is insane. What's it like where you are? And she was like, it's the same. And she was super active in the protests where she lives. And I remember walking by the Apple store and all I could think is like, I was like, they painted it black. I was like, that's just a canvas. I was like, I was talking to her. I was like, I want to go paint it. She was like, go paint it. I was like, okay, I'm going to go home and get some paints.
So this was day one.
Okay,
so day one, you go out and you see a black.
Yeah, giant black board.
Board. And you're like, oh. I know what to do here.
It was the only thing. I think everyone has their skill sets. And the thing that kind of got it for me was my best friend out there, she was saying, like, in the protest for them, like, they were super active and everyone had very different roles. And she was just telling me all about, like, the different roles that everyone has. And, like, she found that she was better in triage. She was, like, better at helping people who had been gassed. Or, like, our friend, he's, like, this just giant person, and he would link arms with people and pull them away from police. And, like, I forget what the name of it's called. So there were all these different jobs. And I kept thinking, I was, like, everyone has their different things that they're good at. Some people are doing all the social media. Some people are writing. There were all these amazing spoken word pieces done at some of the protests, the peaceful ones on the east side. And Like, I just was like, I'm just gonna go paint something. It just like was a gut feeling where I was like, I'm just gonna go put something on the wall. And yeah, I just grabbed, I like actually forgot a ladder because I didn't think I'd be able to, I thought I'd get chased away. So I like brought like only the stuff that I didn't mind losing and my favorite brush, which I was like, I can just hold on to that and sprint. And yeah, and I just kind of started.
So tell us about that first piece that you did.
So the first piece was George Floyd, and it's the main photo that was circulating. Mm-hmm. And the big reason for me for like, I was trying to just think of like what to paint and, you know, the whole lot, because I drove home, got paints and came back. So that whole time I'm like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And it wasn't until like I really got there that I was like, I'm going to do his face. And for anyone who draws or paints, it takes a long time. Like I'm a pretty quick artist, but it still takes about 2 hours for me to paint someone's face. That whole time, you're looking at their face. You're looking very detailed at their face. You're looking at the crease of their eye. You're looking at like the shape of their lip. You're looking at the shadow under their cheek. Mm-hmm. You're spending so much time paying attention to someone's face. And if you think about like, if someone were to sit and stare at you for 2 hours, that's a very like intimate moment.
Well, it requires a lot of vulnerability. I mean, as an artist, the level of vulnerability that it takes to just stare at something and try to see everything that it is.
Yeah.
And then to the best of your abilities, depict that, right?
And it's, yeah, and it, I think, yeah, for me, I kind of just wanted to have a moment with him and to paint him as I saw him. Mm-hmm. And just to kind of, yeah, like just to look at him for a long time, because you just become so familiar with their face and so familiar with all the lines and the things that you might not have paid attention to before. And I actually have pretty bad facial recognition, which I've learned recently. but so to really pay attention to someone, it's kind of it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting practice. And so for me, he kind of was the obvious. Yeah, and then I ended up writing the words and stuff because that was more people were kind of actually... It was pretty positive reaction. And so I kind of just, I was feeling like full of adrenaline. So I kind of just kept going.
That's awesome. Yes. You got to follow the wave of energy. So after doing that piece and the reaction to that piece, how did that lead you to doing more?
So that one, the funny thing was, so I finished that piece. And I was still full of adrenaline. And so some friends of mine, we were going to one of the protests that was supposed to march into downtown. And so I just raced back across the river, parked my car, and joined them. And then we happened to walk right by there. I had no idea that, like, the spot that I had picked was the central location. Like, there wasn't any, like, this is going to get a lot of views, like, type of spot. It was just a big black wall. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up walking right by it. And I was like, oh, my God, they walk right by it. Like, this is amazing. And some graffiti artists had already kind of started tagging the left side of it. And I was like, oh, this is, wow, like, if this is where people are hanging out, this is really cool. And I was like, well, then I'll go put up another face. Like, I'll go paint someone else then. Mm-hmm. Because there's an unspoken rule with graffiti artists or street artists or taggers or muralists, as far as I'm aware, where you don't cover someone else's work. Mm-hmm. If you cover their work, it gives them the opportunity to cover your work. So they had kind of covered like the left side. And I was like, okay, the right side's still free. I'll come back tomorrow. And so I showed up the next day a little bit more confident that I wasn't going to get chased off.
Right.
I think I actually brought a ladder that time. And I painted Brianna's face. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was the same day I painted Ahmed's. Yeah. And the other words on there. And then it kind of just grew. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, once their faces were up, it was kind of catching on and people were liking it. And a lot of people just kind of wanted to help. And I was like, okay. So I, you know, with the help of like a lot of the movie industry that I'm a part of, a lot of us were unemployed. So I just kind of called upon everyone and just said, you know, I'm going to go out and buy, you know, a couple $100 for the paint. Anyone who wants to help paint the background, show up and we can all paint it. And we got people off the street, and I was by that time already getting calls from people in Portland to paint specific people. So Kendra James, Deonta J. Keller, Jason Washington's whole family texted me at once and then later apologized. I got woke up to 12 different people texting me the same message. So his family came down, and it just kind of, I think that's when it started to snowball, and that's when everyone, the community, realized that it was okay for them to put their mark on the wall as well.
Right.
And they're okay, because I think before that it had been, people were kind of worried about whose space it is, if they're, you know, if they're infringing on an artist, if they're, you know, what's allowed, what's not. And that same day, that was when Louis Vuitton painted their boards black. Mm-hmm. I think they realized that if they painted their boards, then they'd get painted as well. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of took off. Like, and then I, you know, I'd go back to paint the smaller faces up above, but it just, I showed up like a couple days later, and it was so covered, and there was so much, like, someone had left chalk, and like there was, I'd left some paint, and there was just, it just took a life of its own. And I honestly, like, I feel like I can't claim credit for it anymore. Like, I can't, like, be like, that's mine. I'm like, no, that's, like, a lot of people's work.
Yeah, it's a lot of people.
There's a great artist named Skies who, and his apprentice Atlas, who painted a George Floyd face around the other side. Mm-hmm. That got a lot of lovely attention. They're amazing artists as well. But yeah, it just kind of took off, and so many people just started adding to it and adding to the areas around it. And now there's, like, full square blocks of artwork, and it just...
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in Portland in general that the ways that we show up to this resistance, right, is really different than other cities. I know other cities have art and, you know, and have murals and but I think Portland specifically, I mean, around the different kinds of protests that we've had, the ones that are for kids, I've seen art therapy protests.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like there's, you know, the drum circles, and there's, you know, there, you know, it's like, you know, Portland has been a place that has really redefined in a way what it looks like to have a protest and for it to sustainably continue, right? And and for it to exist for 100 and something days now.
It's such a community. I think Portland takes things personally. Mm-hmm. Like, as a city, we take things personally. And mm-hmm. I think that especially when the feds were there, I remember I went on one of the nights, it's like a Saturday night, and it was one of the largest, like there were thousands of people.
And I think I was there that night too.
I kept running into people I knew, like, you know, it's a small community, but
we probably were there because we live on my block.
Exactly.
So we probably were there at the same time.
I just remember standing there and watching. They were putting fireworks like off against the building.
Yes. And yes.
Yeah. And well, the crazy thing, I remember standing in like one of the streets kind of in the middle, and I was just amazed at the way everyone who was there had a job. Everyone there was doing their job, and no one was saying, look at me, I'm doing my job. Look at me, I'm doing my job. Isn't my job so great? I'm like contributing. Look at me helping with this resistance. Everyone is just like quietly and furiously doing their job. And right. Whether that's like just being a body in the crowd, whether it's being a medic, whether it's like the dozens of people running around handing out things, whether it's the people giving out food, mm-hmm. or the people who, like, you know, when one group gets gassed, another group goes in, you know, it's just like, it just became this like seamless group of individuals who all are like quietly fighting loudly together. It's like no one's trying to like be like, I'm the best protester. Look at me and my hockey stick. Everyone's just like,
yeah.
Everyone is working together. And it was awe-inspiring for me, at least. I was just like, this is amazing. This is a community of people that, like, when people tell you to sit down, every, you know, 400 other people stand up.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it really is such a community here. And I think that white community here in Portland really has, and like many really have understood the importance of showing up consistently and sticking with it. So you got started doing the murals, and that's of course led to other opportunities to create. How do you see yourself wanting to continue to use your art when it comes to protesting?
It's been kind of figuring it out. A lot of it's kind of just contributing when, you know, it's like if it's a Black Lives Matter thing, I just, you know, waive costs, just figure it out, you know. Mm-hmm. Finding paint donations has actually been pretty easy for it. So just kind of getting that going, and people reach out to like help design posters or like, you know, help with kind of like all these things. But a big part of it for me has actually been, because I am a white artist and I kind of helped open the door of just people being able to put art on walls, I just kind of became a a go-to to find the other artists. Like it just, I started, it was just like all of a sudden it was a network and I could, people would ask, hey, do you, you know, we'd like I get a lot of Instagram messages like, hey, there's this wall, and I could pass them along somebody, or someone being like, hey, like I'm looking for, you know, a piece for this. And so I was actually doing a lot less artwork myself and more passing work on to
delegating,
other people.
Yeah.
And like helping out, like so there were some artists who just hadn't really done murals before. And I grew up kind of, I didn't grow up doing street art, but I grew up doing murals. Like my mm-hmm. mother's a muralist, so I grew up doing it. And so I could help with advice or get donations or kind of pass along materials and kind of like, I accidentally became that like channel of people who know people and being able to kind of give work to the other artists and kind of let their voices rise up and like give them the floor more than, because I don't really need it as, I want them to like raise themselves up and make more art. And there's been like so many amazing artists who have just like blossomed. And a lot of the like, I feel like I'm ranting in the wrong way. There's so many artists who I met who never painted in daylight. That was like a big thing. Like I'd never, there are all these artists that I met who had never painted in daylight. They'd always been these street artists that kind of were in the dark, and all of a sudden they were out in the light and out being painting during the day and being paid for it. And like kind of watching that grow has been really rewarding, and watching that community kind of because like slipping into that community and then like helping it out because I'm not a huge part of that community. I just kind of have like gotten to know it recently. And so I think that that's been a big way that I've helped, is just kind of helping to pass along work. But I don't really know. I'm rambling now. Help.
No, you're fine. You're fine. No. I'm just like, oh. And this is a piece of your art as well?
This is a piece of my art that usually sits in my studio that I look at before I make something new.
Really?
Yeah.
How old is this piece? Or how long have you had this piece?
Oh, not very old. Okay. It's I actually only started using color in my work like this year. I usually work in black and white.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
This was like, yeah, the like, I'm going to paint with colors.
So where would you like to take your art? Like going forward from here, like what kinds of things do you want to create or?
I want to create giant things.
It's great.
So over the last couple of months, I've been working with different artists of many different backgrounds and ethnicities and all different, like, just we've been collaborating and kind of creating bigger pieces together. Mm-hmm. And that's been really nice to just like see all of that. And I kind of just want to like get more of that art to happen, because this great artist named Jamali Roberts, he said it best, and I'm going to try and sloppily reiterate him. But public art becomes, it's free art for people. People get to walk through the streets and like see it and get inspired by it. And so art that really represents them and their own people and kind of like helps just kind of ground the community and ground the fact that like, no, you are here. This is your space. This is your art. This is your like beautiful thing that you get to look at. Kind of just creating that and really involving people of so many different backgrounds to kind of help make that a standing of just that we're all in it together. And just and so kind of I really want to create giant things. I want to paint giant walls. I had, there's like the stairwell below the Burnside Bridge that I just wanted to paint like a giant Louis Armstrong.
But right on.
it's the right shape. And I was like, oh, get that trumpet in there, it'd be so good. Yeah. And I just think that public art, it becomes free art for people, and it creates the space that becomes much more your own space and more for the community, and everyone kind of works together on it. And I think also having all these people of different backgrounds, different, you know, lifestyles, different ethnicities, different religions, different everything, and kind of bringing that all together into a big swirl and just getting all of those different walks of life all up on the walls. I would love to just be a muralist for life. It's kind of hard to just snap and make that a career, but that's what I'd like to do.
Well, you're speaking it into existence. Like you're saying it.
I'm so like, hey, hire me.
You're saying it.
I'll paint some big.
It's happening. Like you're getting those opportunities to create art, and it endures. And it's like people see the art that you've created driving down the street and walking in the neighborhood, whether there's protesters there or not. And
it's, there's, I think my favorite, one of my favorite pieces that I've created since the protest began is actually the Neil Kelly building on the corner of Alberta and Albina, and they wanted a Black Lives Matter like mural. So we decided just these two beautiful portraits of a Black woman and a Black man, and just all these florals. And that one, I think for me, that was my favorite of just putting, I just, a lot of like the community there came up while I was painting it. And I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, it is awesome, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's cool. I think just kind of having more of those visuals and just kind of making the world around you a beautiful place and making it a place that's meant for you. And that's, you know, you kind of, as a community, grow it. And yeah, I don't know. Makes it homey.
Now, how has that been sharing space with other artists, with other Black artists? Like, how has that been for you sharing space with all of them?
I think I have discovered why most artists work alone, because we're very interesting collaborators. Mm-hmm. There is a small group that Jamali Roberts, the one I mentioned before, and mm-hmm. also this guy named Travis Fields, that we all realized we worked very, very well together. We kind of started a mini collective of, we would do a lot of projects together. But it's been amazing to kind of see the different styles. There's also this artist named Roselle Mendez. I hope that's the right last name. That we worked on a project up in St. John's, and mm-hmm. he has this very interesting like line work, and it's kind of, I think that for working with all the various artists, it hasn't really, like, there's never been a difference of, like, you know, what background they're in. It's kind of everyone's egos at bay. And so it's like, whether I'm working, I worked with Jamali actually the most, and he's a Black artist. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's never been any kind of, I think like the most that happened was I prefer actually to paint portraits of people of color. This is one of the few white people I've painted, but I just find the colors in just various skin tones just much more fun and much more expressive and much more colorful. But I feel I don't ever want to put anyone in traditional garb. I feel like that's, so I just make everyone naked. I'm like, you all can be naked. Cause, and I talked to him and he's like, that makes sense. He's like, cause you can paint someone of color and that can represent them, but you don't want to take their culture. And I think that's a fine line that I've kind of, as a white artist painting people of color, I never want to betray that line.
That kind of brings me to what I wanted to ask is that as a white artist that's very active in this Black Lives Matter movement and creating a lot of art that is in support of that, that is indicative of that, that is expressive of that, like riding that line of not appropriating or not like imposing too much of like, and so that's interesting that you said that you know, you were painting people naked or, you know, because it's like, cause that's the thing is that like putting clothes onto people is putting culture onto someone. Right.
And I feel like it's not my place to do that. And it's kind of the same, like I'm a Jewish woman. And, you know, if a bunch of Catholics went and painted a Jewish person, I don't know how, you know, if they like made them like really Jewish, I'm like, okay, what are you doing? I'm
like, what do you know about that? Like, yeah.
And so, you know, and I don't know offhand how I'd feel, but I feel like it's not my place to put that. And so that's been the fine line of like where I don't want to be misread as doing something the wrong way. And I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings or be, you know, offensive in that. So it's kind of, that's been more difficult. And so the portrait.
Have you had challenges or what have you had negative feedback or have you had things that like challenges that have arisen doing this?
I think I mostly just have had people question, if you're a white woman, why are you painting people of color?
Mm-hmm. And that came from Black people, from white people, from everyone?
It actually comes more from white people. Mm-hmm.
White people be like that, though.
It comes much more from white people. I actually specifically, so the painting, the portraits that I just said before on the Alberta, on Albina streets, mm-hmm. there was like this wonderful old Black woman who came up. She was just like, this is amazing. And I was like, I'm sorry if it's weird if I'm a white woman painting Black people. She's like, nah, you got to do it if I can't. And I was just like, okay, I can, you know, I like that. But I think that's definitely, I get more backlash, I think, from the white community who feel that it's inappropriate that I'm doing that more than I have from anyone of color. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I'm still on that fine line. I don't want, you know, to be like, well, it's only the white people have a problem. Like, no, it's, I still want to like keep it in check.
So even beyond art, beyond your art, like what do you want to see happen with white community here in Portland? What are ways that you think white community can grow and white community can shift, or things that, like, what are things that you've, so, I mean, you've had a bird's eye view of this movement, mm-hmm. As a creator and also as a protester, right? And like, what are things that you would love to see more of and see less of?
I think a lot of it comes down to paying attention. There's this conversation I had with a black woman up in, she was in St. John's area, and she was telling me, it was a phone conversation, but she was telling me how the protests and the acting like at, for the shootings and all of this, it's a big standing moment. And she's like, but it's a fad. And I'm worried that when the fad dies, nothing will actually change. And she's like, because, yeah, these things are terrible. They need to stop. But my day-to-day life hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm invisible. And I think that, you know, and she's like, as a black woman, I'm invisible. And I with the problems that I have in my life, I'm invisible to so many people. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of aspects that I don't have any, like, immediate, like, this is the solution to that. But I think paying attention to that, and Portland, Oregon is a really white place, and recognizing that it is a very, very, it's a very, very white place.
Ain't that the damn truth?
Uh-huh. And
but that doesn't have to be a bad thing.
It doesn't have to
be. Right? It is what it is, right?
It is what it is, but I think understanding and paying attention to that and paying mm-hmm. attention to where that becomes the problem.
Right.
And after, you know, we're in this resistance, but making the resistance, paying attention to these aspects of life that actually that matter, mm-hmm. the smaller aspects of life that, like, you know, there's like these grand scheme things that need to change ASAP. They should have changed years ago. You know, we're working on it.
They should have never existed in the first place. That part.
Yeah.
But there are issues that we're facing in this country that you'd be like, wait, y'all didn't fix this 40 years ago? Like, y'all are still, you know, we're still having some of the same struggles. So I totally understand what you mean.
No. You're exactly right. I think that's the bit that, like, as people, we need to, like, recognize also the smaller bits, the bits that, you know, trickle down and affect a huge community of people that are invisible.
Right.
And I think that it's that invisible community that needs to be seen and needs to be listened to and taken care of and, like, helped out and helped out in a way that's not demeaning and, like, given the chance to, you know, live a good life and not made invisible. And I think that that's kind of the ways that that works and the ways that, you know, to help that, I am not equipped with those answers, but I think that, yeah, that conversation, I think, struck me really hard of just kind of being like, yeah, that sucked. Because she was just like, yeah, these protests are amazing. I'm glad everything's happening. You know, this is for me and my people. But like, what happens actually at the end of it? And she's like, what are all the small life bits that are going to change? And right. I was like, that is a thought.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the, I think that part can get a bit, like, diluted and a bit, like, conflated, right? Is like,
what does conflated mean?
Conflated means that, like, it just gets confused with other stuff, or it gets almost, like washed over, mm-hmm. right? Or just, like, you know, just the wires get crossed, right? Or, you know, and so I think that when we're looking at, when we're thinking of this term that, like, Black Lives Matter, that it's not just about the police.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just about, like, the police shouldn't have the right to kill Black people easily.
Yeah.
As they currently do. But it's really about something much bigger involving Black lives, right?
It's actually Ahmed Aubrey's, the one portrait that I painted on the Apple mural that I think he was the only one not killed by police. And it's actually a personal thing for me of just how two white guys can go grab a gun and go drive down the street and shoot someone jogging, and how that is just.
And then they went home afterward. They had dinner. They were chilling for a couple of months.
It boggles my mind how that is the thought process, how that is deemed as even slightly acceptable for some people. And it just doesn't make, like, I remember when that happened and I was just stunned. And I was like, I don't understand.
I think that this year for a lot of white people was really like, oh, like it was a wake up call for a lot of white people. Just things that they saw of just like, wait, two men could just go down and like shoot a guy who's jogging and then go home and chill, or, you know, and like this police officer can like keep their knee on someone's neck who's clearly dying.
Yeah.
And it's like, or they can just like go do a drive-by shooting at this girl's home.
Oh yeah.
Mistakenly. And so I think that for a lot of white community here in Portland, like that, like people are just like, this is wild. Like this is, and you know, unfortunately for black people, none of this is shocking. There's a thought that I had that like for black people, it's almost like when these things happen, we can't take them too personally. Cause if we take it too personally, like we'll go crazy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, there's a certain level of like emotional detachment that we have to have with it. There's a certain amount of emotional detachment that a black person has to have at all times while living in the society, and not like truly taking all of the things personal, mm-hmm. right? Because there's so many things that are just built up against us from jump, right? And so you try not to even like, you're like, oh, another person was killed. Okay, how do I mourn this but not take it too personally? Because if I take it too personally, then I'm gonna go burn something, right? I'm gonna go crazy, right? Like, and so I think that that's been I think that for white community, they're getting a taste of that.
Yeah.
In terms of like, and I think also white community, especially in Portland, and those who have really engaged with this in a meaningful way, it brings you closer to your humanity.
I think
I think that for a long time, whiteness is on the other spectrum of humanity. It's not a part, it's a thing. It's not really a part of humanity. It's just a thing, right? It's a thing that someone made up and called a thing. But whiteness isn't a part of humanity. It's just like a thing, right? And it's like, oh, this means something, but it really doesn't, because we really are all just human beings, right?
Goes back to the very first point you made.
See how I'll bring it back? See how I'll bring it back?
You.
But it really comes back to this concept of humanity and like everyone getting closer to it. And you know, and it's interesting because like for me, when I was participating in the protests and going out with on the East Side and doing the marches into all the neighborhoods and speaking at those marches and leading the chants and like really seeing a lot of white community atoning, right? Like feeling the pain and feeling and like crying their eyes out and just really like really atoning for their parents, for their grandparents, for because that's the thing, is that like all of the things that have happened has happened as a part of a society that we all participate in, right? Like, so it's on all of us. It's on all, like, that's the thing, is that like if I see a woman being raped down the street, it's on me too. Like, whoever's doing that is the worst, and they should not be doing that. If I see a child being attacked, if I see, like, we've all been a part of a society that has valued men over women, has valued white lives over black lives, has valued white lives over everyone's life,
has valued straight over gay,
and the thing about it is, a lot of times we think that if it's not personally me, I'm not doing that, but it's not personally me, so it really doesn't have anything to do with me. And I think Portland and this movement is like people realizing, like, if I don't do anything, that means that like I'm super chill with this.
Yeah.
The funniest thing to me is like, it's like, oh yeah, there's racism. Racism is like an airborne pathogen that no one actually really has personally, but we agree that it's everywhere. Like, it's like white people are like, oh no, I'm not racist. The society's racist, but not me specifically. Like no, I couldn't be. It's just in the air. But it's like, there's so many things that we all do that are complicit with a society that, you know, and it's like, there's so many things that we don't even notice.
Well, there's a lot of things we don't notice, but things that we're not really told in a way that like is public, like sentencing. Like, sentencing is messed up. Mucho. And, just people's lives are, like, you know, just tossed upside down because of sentencing, because of the way that the judicial system kind of has that upper hand, and the way the judicial system is run by a bunch of old white guys.
Right.
And, you know, and that is, like, you know, that's another one, like, you know, it's a big part, but it's, like, one of the small parts of, like, the day-to-day life. Like, if you get caught with something versus, like, a white guy gets caught with something, it's just become different. Yeah. And that's messed up. And, like, yeah, that's one of the small things that, like, but we don't see that on a day-to-day life. Like, we don't see that, like, right, on the streets.
Well, right. It's, like, the underlying thing is I think that what a lot of white community is learning right now is, like, the actual power of their voices, right? If I speak up, this has weight to it, that there's a tension that's brought to this thing. And I think in that way, Portland is a great prototype for a lot of the world, a lot of the city, is that it really needs to, this change that needs to happen in American society is not with black people. Like, you don't got to convince black people that our lives are worth something, right? Or that you shouldn't be killing us in the street. Like, I don't need a bunch of black people, like, marching, like, look, we're trying to tell you we shouldn't be doing it. It's like, we need white community to show up because this systemic thing has existed in the deepest parts of whiteness.
Well, we also just need to adjust our main mode of thinking. And, like, a lot of that, my best friend that I talked about earlier, she also works in film. And we went into this huge discussion about media and the media that we grew up with and the TV shows and the movies that we get used to and the way that people are portrayed in that and the way that you start to see characters form and the people you root for and, like, you know, the people you know are going to die at some point during the film or the people that, like, the evil character, you know, you start to learn the world. And a lot of people don't travel. A lot of people are, like, you know, kind of, they don't go
absolutely
that far.
Yeah.
And you start to learn the world through these movies and these TV shows. And if they're, like, they need to step up also and start kind of telling more stories and more, like, stories that aren't, like, you know, if there's a black person, they're not living in the ghetto. They have a house. They have a freaking family. They have a car. They mm-hmm. have a job. Like, everything is normal. And just telling those stories and normalizing the fact that they're human, yeah, just like you. And I think
it comes back to humanity. Like,
it comes back to humanity. And I think just normalizing, you know, just bringing to the media and making it more apparent and making, you know, the main characters not always, like, you know, a white guy.
Right. And I think that brings us back to art, right? And, like, art, how art depicts life, right? And for so long, a lot of art we've seen were depictions from white artists, right? Like, mm-hmm. from the film industry to high fine art to, you know, it's like, yeah. And so having more space to show more variety of humanity and realize that, like, it's not about, like, oh, just Black Lives Matter. It's about, like, Black lives are human.
They're human lives.
They're human just like everyone else, that they're human. Like, that they have the same highs and lows. They have the same aspirations and depressions. Like
they have the same emotions. They have the same goals. They have the same, they're human. They're lives. And I think there's a quote that, I grew up with that art is not to recreate reality, but to create a reality of the same intensity.
Yeah.
And I think it's like art kind of shows people, like, what's possible. Like, it depicts this big thing of just, like, I'm going to put, you know, I can't,
right.
I don't see it in front of me because you have to create something you don't see in front of you. So I'm going to create something new.
You can amplify something
that
yeah.
you can look at and look towards and see. And I think art plays a big role in that of, yeah, just kind of having something that people can look up to and look at and look forward to. And, like, it's very physically
aspire
there.
To. Like, yeah. I thank you for doing that with your art. Thank you for using your skills to amplify this movement and to amplify other Black artists in the process. It really is, like, we're all really in this together. And we need to work all together and we need to, like, collaborate and create together. And that's how we re-envision the future. That's how we create a future that we actually want to live in.
And I think it's a way that we get more voices in that. And I think, like I kind of take personally very small responsibility for the artwork downtown. I think I just opened the door. I think I just kind of let people know they weren't going to get dragged away for putting something on the wall. And mm-hmm. then I took a big step back. Because when I look at that wall now, I see so many other people's words and pieces and artwork. And I think that, yeah, it's just, it's many voices we need. It's many different voices. And I think that we need different voices from different backgrounds and different colors to all be like, hey, did you know that I'm human too?
Right, right.
Well, by the way, I'm a human.
I know historically you guys didn't count me as human, but we're not there. We're not there anymore. So like, let's like accept that everyone's human, right? And that everyone's life has value. Our whole society improves when we accept that fact.
And our whole society improves when we experience everyone's culture. So when we like get everyone's aspects of their life and like everyone gets to amplify it and everyone gets stronger and like God, the food will be so much better and like yeah. everybody,
yeah.
you know, and I think that it counts. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Emma, thank you so much for sitting and chatting in the Portland Art Museum.
Thanks for letting me ramble. I know you're a little...
Like, no. Like I'm a rambler. I started with a whole tangent about humanity at the beginning of this. Like, but thank you so much. What are ways that if someone wants to find you, look you up, what are ways that people can do that?
Instagram at Flat Rabbit Studio or flatrabbitstudio.com.
Okay.
Those are usually the best ways to find me.
Yeah. Thank you for sitting with me in the Portland Art Museum and for continuing to create art that actually really helps to change culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Thanks, man.
It was great to be
with
you.
I'm all giddy.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Art Unbound. I'd like to thank Emma Berger for sitting down with Marcel Michel and telling her story. We hope that you will all follow Emma's lead and use your talents to help promote change in our community.